Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just so broke, you won't believe. Can't get a dollar out of me. And as far as I can see, I'm losing control like a bad disease. No, I just can't get relief. I've been shot down by the life police. Cause every day I try to rise, but I can't succeed. Can anybody find a cure for me? You can be bitter, bitter, bitter. Or you can be better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne. Now every day is like a brand new year. I throw my hands up in the air like I just don't care. I'm moonwalking down the street feeling like, oh yeah, oh yeah. Feel like the bottom of the gas, now I see clear. So now I laugh just a little more. I'm doing much taller than I did before. I know I'm not where I need to be, but I thank God that I'm not where I used to be. I used to be bitter, bitter, bitter. But now I feel better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne. Don't worry, little children. And don't complain. Whoa, remember your golden. Your body's some sugar cane. Great life gives you lemon. Take lemonade.
I would say for a reason that I can't explain. Got something new to believe in. I'm awakened again. How many miracles I happen each day. If I can just get out of my own way.
When life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne.
I'm a man of many talents. I'm more talented than Alex Boyer. More people ask for my autograph than for him. They're not going to tell you that. That little, like, rap part, where we're like, lemonade, so dumb. It's already been done, like, a billion times. But luckily I was in the shot, because I saved it. Redemption. You're welcome, Alex.
Good evening, everyone. That was Alex Boyer, the Lemonade Song. This is your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. And you're listening to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show. This show is for the tame and the untamed. It's serious with a dash of humor. Life is what you make it. You may be rich, but unhappy, or broken happy. You may have had many adversities in your life. How many pity parties did you have? Ever went from being a victim to becoming victorious? Ever been down so low you could swing your legs on a dime? Do you have a sense of humor? Ever laughed at yourself? What is your overall view of life? Want to vent or just have something to get off your chest? If you answer yes to one of these questions, this show is for you. You get free exposure if you're a business owner, starting a business, author, expert, or just want to share information of importance. I invite you to come on as a guest and let's chop it up. Sorry, there'll be no discussion of religion or politics. If you're interested in being a co-host or a guest, email me at gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Again, that's gjdelicious37@gmail.com. And I'm going to play a song that's going to sort of like open up the show tonight, but how you feel about it is on you. But I will explain once you listen to the song.
Children, now don't tell me that you're sorry, darling. I have much to blame as
anyone.
It's over and done, darling. I'm so glad to have your home.
Welcome home,
my baby.
Welcome home,
my darling. 'Cause this time we'll make it. We'll give love as well as take. We'll let pride be something we have in our love,
in our love.
Not just in ourselves. Baby, it's so good to have your home. Into my heart, into my life, as man and wife, forever. Thought we acted just like children.
That was a song by Walter Jackson. I'm almost in tears over here. But anyway, that song titled Welcome Home, such a beautiful rendition by Walter Jackson, who is deceased. But I could see a movie, a short story like playing in my brain where, you know, he's welcoming his wife home, a girlfriend home, after they had a misunderstanding and went through some changes and she left. And she may have went and stayed on the streets, or she may have went and stayed in a shelter or stayed with family members. However, she was homeless. So when she got herself together, or when they talked and got everything, you know, straightened out, he's welcoming her back home into his life, his heart, and everything. So that's the little scenario and the little story I got from just listening to that. And like I said, I'm almost in tears over here, because if you listen to some of these songs, they do have a message depending on how you listen to them, what type of mood you're in, or what you're going through. But that's just how I saw that song at that particular time. And if you're just tuning in, I'm Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. I'm your host this evening. And I will be talking about homelessness, and also I'll be sharing some of my story of being homeless as well. Now, as I put up in the bulletin, homelessness really is an epidemic because it's just so prevalent. It's just so horrible that people are homeless, some for different reasons, but whatever the reason, there shouldn't be any homeless people on the streets, period. Because they have too many homes that have boards on them, and, you know, they're tearing down homes, putting up condos, putting up homes, unaffordable housing for people who could afford them. Because I remember growing up in the projects and how they came and tore the projects down and built these homes on them. And, of course, they said that the people who lived there in the projects before they put those homes up had first preference to coming back. But you had to have your lease for when you lived in those projects all those years, and you also had to make a certain amount of money. So that wiped out a lot of the people that were invited, quote-unquote, to come back. See, what they're doing is they're making it impossible for people to even come back to these places once they build them up and give them first preference to come back, knowing their circumstances. Because basically there were I don't know if you could say they were middle class or poor, but, you know, us living in the projects, I never knew that we were poor, but I knew that I felt that white people were rich, and I thought that for the longest time when I was young. I always thought that white people were rich and other people, you know, black people were poor. But as I got older, I, you know, learned a few things as far as people's livelihoods as being wealthy, poor, middle class, and homeless and the such. And today, I think middle class is just gone. I think you're either rich or you're poor. Because middle class is just, if they exist, I don't know, you know, it's not as prevalent as it was. And being homeless, like I said, some people don't have any choice. Like, for instance, I'm living in North Carolina now, and I'm quite sure everybody is familiar with Hurricane Matthews, Hurricane Florence that blew through here. Matthew blew through here last year. Hurricane Florence blew through here this year and left a lot of people homeless. Just as what happened in New Orleans with Katrina, a lot of people homeless and displaced and having to move all over different parts of the United States and different states, different cities, different towns because of having a disaster such as hurricanes, floods, tornadoes and such. And then you have homelessness because a person may have lost their job or, you know, it's just so many reasons why a person is homeless. And for people to treat homeless people like garbage is really sickening to me because you don't know that person's situation. You see a person on the street begging for money or have signs of saying I'm hungry. And some of these people, you can look at them and tell that they're homeless. But yes, so you're going to haul out, get a job, bum, call them bums and other sorts. But don't forget, that shoe can fit your foot too. And I'm quite sure that there are some people who are homeless right now that never even dreamed that they would be homeless. And they may have been some of the people who call people bums or you know, just disrespectful to other homeless people. You always have to put yourself in that same situation because I've been there. And my heart goes out to all the homeless people. Now, there are some people out there that are scamming, but, you know, it'll come back to them. But there are people out there that are actually hungry and are begging for food and need food because they have nowhere to live. And how these people, they all of them get together and they build like tents in a certain area. then here comes the police or here comes the government telling them they got to move, get out, and all this whole kind of stuff. Okay, so you move them from there. Why didn't you move them into some sort of housing? You know, they're just going to set up tents and those cardboard boxes and things in other areas. But they're moving them out because they want to build apartments there. They want to build condos there, or they want them gone because it doesn't make the area look good. The best way to make the area look good is to give them a home. Now, I know that people are saying, well, what about them paying rent and stuff like that? Okay. If there could be programs to help drug addicts and, you know, other people doing their thing or whatever's going on, surely there could be programs to house homeless people temporarily, or at least until they get on their feet, you know, by sending them through a program or, you know, getting them together. And a lot of these homeless people that's been on the street for years and years and years, they have developed mental illnesses, they have developed diseases and sickness and things like that from being in the elements 24/7. You know, true, some of them may live in shelters, but some of those shelters are just as bad as living on the outside. And some of those shelters are not safe because a lot of people, you know, when I used to, when I was living in D.C., I would, you know, talk to some of the homeless people that I ran across. And one lady had told me that she lived in Germantown, somewhere in D.C. Now, where I met her was in Northeast Washington, D.C. She had all these bags and, you know, tons and tons of bags, black garbage bags. And she was just sitting there outside of a gas station. So I was going into the gas station to get something. I think I had $10. I gave her $5. And when I came out, I sat down, and I talked with her, and I asked her, you know, how long you've been out here? Because it was dark, and it was like getting ready. I think it was just turning fall. And she said she had been there for a few days. And the reason why I saw her this particular time was because I was going to my cousin's house, and I take that route on Sundays to have Sunday dinners with my cousin Nancy. May she continue to rest in peace. And so I sat down and I asked her, you know, where you live? She said in Germantown, but her caseworker had dropped her off in D.C. I said, dropped you off? You know, now, I don't know if she, well, maybe I didn't ask her, you know, all the direct questions that I should, but I said, what do you mean she dropped? She said she dropped her off and told her to get in touch with her in a few days. So I'm saying to myself, that's kind of strange. But, you know, I just have to take her for her word because that's what she told me. So I told her, I said, well, I'm on my way to my cousin's house, and, you know, you have a blessed evening. I said, and if there's anything that I can do for you, you know, if I come this way, just let me know. So she said, well, could you get me a tent? So at that particular time, I don't think I was working anywhere, but I was getting an income, but she asked for a tent, and I tried to find her a tent. But they were too, like, expensive. And then I think, like I said, at this particular time, it was changing the seasons. So I bought her a, a thing you sleep in, a sleeping bag. I bought her a sleeping bag. Now, mind you, I had went over there a couple of times, you know, after the first time, and we talked. So when I did get the sleeping bag, I went back, and she was gone. All her bags, everything, gone. So that laid heavy on my heart, and I was wondering, you know, what happened to her, you know, where she was. I never saw her again. But, you know, just speaking with, you know, homeless people, and they tell me, you know, their stories. One guy said that he had lost his job, and he had just, I think him and his wife had just bought the house or something like that, and lost a job, and his wife left him. So he was trying to struggle and pay the bills and everything until he lost his job, and then he eventually had to move. So I asked him had he had any contact with his wife, he said he hadn't seen or heard from her since, you know. But, you know, and then people have a tendency to lose their grip on, what's real and what's not real. They lose their sense of being, and they sort of like start hallucinating or get mental and, you know, become combative and, you know, just different things of the sort. And that's a contribution of them being homeless, because people, you know, a lot of people that are on the street are so stressed out and just are so fed up with the way they've been treated, you know, going through the homelessness, plus the fact that the reason why they're homeless, they have all this to bear on them, and nobody's trying to help them. So they lose it, and they become mentally ill, and they strike out, and they, you know, do all kind of things, and then people want to, you know, be arresting them and manhandling them and treating them like crap. But you have to know a person's story. You have to know what's going on with them before you can criticize them, before you can just count them off and say, oh, forget them, they homeless, that's their problem. No, it's not their problem. It's everybody's problem, because the shoe can always fit your foot. Believe that. Believe. And, you know, just like I ran into another young lady who was homeless. She said that she was homeless from Katrina. Now, this is when I was living in D.C. She said she was homeless from Katrina. And she had some relatives in the area, but when she moved in with them, they got evicted. You know, so she's bouncing from this place to that place, you know, sleeping on this person's couch or that person's couch and, you know, trying to survive. And she was a young person, you know. Young people, children, babies, it doesn't matter. Homelessness doesn't discriminate. You know, even though I read an article, and I'm going to share that article with you guys right now. I hope I can see it because of my glasses. I'm having problems with my glasses. But I'm going to read this article that I found to you guys. And it says, racial disparities in homelessness in the United States. And it says, most minority groups in the United States experience homelessness at higher rates than whites, and therefore make up a disproportionate share of the homeless population. African Americans make up more than 40% of the homeless population, but represent 13% of the general population. American Indians, Alaskan Native, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders, and those of more than one race each make up less than 5% of the general population. But each group's share of homelessness population is more than double their share of the general population. The proportion of Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders in the homeless population, 1.3%, is 6.5 times higher than their proportion in the general population, 0.2%. Those identifying as Hispanics make up 18% of the general population, but 21% of the homeless population. Both white and Asians are significantly unrepresented among the homeless population. Any effort to end homelessness in the United States must address the range of issues that have resulted from racial inequity. This includes assuring affordable, stable housing for all, systems, programs, and individuals that serve people in experiencing homelessness should monitor their outcome in order to eliminate disparities in the way they provide services. Okay, so right there, African Americans are the most homeless people out there. And whites and Asians are significantly underrepresented among the homeless population. Now, the thing of it is there could be, well, there are things as how economy plays a part in homelessness too. Because if you're working on a job that pays minimum wage and you're living in an apartment, your rent is $900 or $800, there's no way that you can survive living in that apartment, not for long, not unless you have roommates. And sometimes you may get the wrong roommate in there with you, so you try to make it on your own, and the next thing you know, you're on the street. Whereas Asians, those people, they will stack up in a house. Everybody works every day, 10, 11, 12 of them, can be in a two-bedroom. Rent be $16,000, $17,000, $2,000. But everybody works every day, and they pay the rent. So the economy plays a part in it, and the fact that people don't, some people mismanage their money, including myself. At times I have mismanaged my money, and like I said, I myself was homeless. I was homeless three times in my life. The first time I was homeless, I was, I think I was like in my 20s. And I was working, but I was just being so reckless. And, you know, I don't know this particular time. I think, I don't even remember what happened all those years ago. But I do remember coming home and all my things was on the street. And fortunately, a lady who lived in the next building sat there the whole day and watched and made sure nobody took any of my things off the street. So a girlfriend of mine had offered to let me leave some things at her place, and the rest of the things I just sold or whatever, but my important things like clothes, papers, photos, and all those things, and a few pieces of furniture I left at a girl's house. And I might as well have left them on the street because this girl moved, didn't notify me, didn't tell me anything. So I lost everything. I lost everything. And the second time I was homeless was, okay, I had just had my son, and I was in a relationship with this guy, and he had supposedly been paying the rent. Unbeknownst to me, he wasn't paying the rent. So the landlord came by looking for the rent, and him and the guy I was in a relationship got into an argument because the landlord was going to wait for us to get the money together, but the guy I was in a relationship, he cursed him out and threatened him, and also he said, we all got to go. So that was the second time that I was homeless, and I went and stayed in a shelter for one night because this shelter was, it was like an apartment, and first, it smelled like ammonia. It smelled like pea and pine saw. And then an apartment, it was just disastrous. But it was shelter. And then the fact that what made me leave after one night staying there, and I don't even know if I stayed the whole night, but there was these big flying cockroaches in there. And I had just had a new baby. I said, oh, no. So I left there and was staying in different places with girlfriends, and, you know, I stayed with my sister a little while, and then eventually, you know, I was working, so a lady on a job had, I had told her my situation, and in a couple of weeks, she had gotten me a project. So it was one bedroom, you know, me and my daughter and my son, we moved in there and stayed there for, you know, a few years, but it was miserable because it was just, you know, people don't take care of anything. You hear noise all times of the night, and the hallway was always dirty and stinky, and, you know, but it was, I had my own apartment, so, you know, I had to be grateful and thankful of that. You know, I didn't have to worry about somebody getting angry with me because my baby was crying, or, you know, You know, because you know when people are fed up with you. You know. So anyway, I was dating a different guy, and a friend of his was dating this other girl. So where she lived, we had went, well, we was motorcycle riding this particular night, and we went past her place, and it was beautiful, beautiful apartments. Had a pool and balconies and this and that. Now, this was back in the 70s, mind you, 1970, I think it was 1974 when I moved in, because my son was like two or something like that. But anyway, so, it was a lot of vacancies. So I said, well, how come there's so many vacancies? And what had happened was, now, believe this, back in 1974, because when I moved in the apartment, I had a two-bedroom, balcony, air conditioner, central air, all this good stuff. The rent was $174. Okay. And she said what had happened was people had went on a rent strike. I said, a rent strike? You know, but whatever. Something was going on. But eventually, you know, people moved, you know, into the apartments. It wasn't really like the whole complex was empty, but, you know, you could see that there were a few empty apartments. So I lived there for about almost 20 years or something like that, I think. And I went through a lot of things in my life, becoming a drug addict and this and that, and eventually I just moved out. And my daughter was, I think my daughter was pregnant when I had moved out. So her and my son, they stayed in the apartment. And so we just, you know, I just kept doing crazy things and all this so crazy. So eventually when I did get my life together, I went to jail, got out of jail, took a trade, got a good job, good pay, and, you know, I really got myself grounded and was doing much better than what I had been doing in my life. So eventually I moved into my first house, which I rented from my baby brother. I stayed there for a minute. Then he filed bankruptcy, and the house went into foreclosure. So I moved to Largo in a condominium, and the person who owned the condominium was not paying the rent. I found that out. So I moved from there into another house in Capitol Heights, Maryland, stayed in the house for 15 years. The owner died, and his wife told me he died February. In April, well, she had told me he had died, and, you know, she said, don't worry about anything because you was the best tenant he ever had, and he wanted you to keep the house, blah, 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 blah. To make a long story short, she called me April Fool's Day to tell me that her son wanted to sell the house. I've never met her son, never seen her son, but I've heard about her son, you know, through her husband. But I was in total shock. And I'm saying to myself, where in the world am I going to go? Living in a four-bedroom home, and the items and things that I had accumulated over those years because of my brother and his now wife used to rent the basement out from me, and I had another couple of tenants renting the basement out. You know, it was just like, I'm saying, what in the world? So eventually I packed up all my things, put them in storage, you know, the things I wanted to put in storage, and called my sister and asked her, could I come and stay with her? Now, this is my biological sister. At first, she says, well, I don't know. But then she called me back, and she said, well, since you let me come and stay with you, and she had four kids when she came to stay with me when I was living in the two-bedroom apartment, she said, yeah, you can come and stay. So I'm not going to make this a long story. I'm just going to condense it a little bit, but sometimes when you go and stay with relatives, and this is an experience that I experienced, I'm not saying that everybody will go through this or has been through this or you might go through this, but this is what I experienced. I felt as if I had jumped from the frying pan into the fire. And it's all because my sister has been my sister forever, but little did I know that she was going to be the person that I learned she was until I lived with her. And I'm telling you, like I said, it was like going from the frying pan into the fire. I lived with her for 8 months. And I'm telling you, my sister, I found out that she didn't like paying her bills. She just likes to gamble, buying scratch-offs. Her house was always messy, junky, and but you know, she never had an odor in her house, but it was always a mess, just junk everywhere and dust, spider webs, and all this kind of stuff. Now, mind you, I moved into the basement. I had to clean the basement up so I could put the things that I wanted to have with me to make me comfortable, which was my television, computer, some curtains, you know, just fixing it up, because I asked her, you know, she said I could stay in the basement, and I know what her basement, you know, could accommodate. So I had my little refrigerator down there, my microwave, and, you know, things of the sort. So staying there those 8 months, like I said, was pure H-E-L-L. Her gas was turned off. The water was turned off. Eventually, the electricity was turned off. My sister tried to blame the fact that the electricity was going to be cut off because of me. She went around telling everybody I gave her a $9,000 electricity bill, which was a lie. When I moved in there, her electric bill was $900-some. Now, mind you, I stayed there 8 months. And like I said, she did not like to pay her bill, so she didn't pay it. And the last time I looked at her electric bill was about a month before I had left, because she told me to pass it to her, and it was like $3,000-some. But she had promised the electric company that she was going to send them $700 a month till she caught up or whatever. She did that for a minute, and then she stopped. So, but what happened, with God's good grace, I got out of there before the electricity got cut off. But I was there when the water got turned off. I was there when the heat was turned off. I was there when it flooded in that basement. And who had to clean it up? Me. Because I was living down there. Can you imagine, her sewage was right outside her basement door? Feces, toilet paper, and anything else coming up through the shower. And I had to clean that up twice. Because the first time it happened, it was because she was washing, and I don't know what had happened, but she went upstairs, and, you know, that was it. I had to clean all that mess up. So the second time, I wake up in the morning and went into the little bathroom, because there was a bathroom down there, and the floor was, my rugs and everything was ruined. Doo-doo was all in the shower. So I said, no, she's not washing again. So I called upstairs, and I said, it's flooding down here. That wasn't her concern. Do you know what she had the audacity to say? She said, that's not the first time it flooded in there. You know, but that's the first time it flooded in there since I was there. You know, but my sister, and I hate to really say this about her, but she's trifling. Just trifling, and for no reason, because I've seen things she's done that would make me, make a person sick on their stomach. But I had to go through this because that was the only place I had that I could stay. And trust and believe, I was asking God each and every day to please get me out of this situation that I'm in. And I was on the, I was to the brink where I was just really feeling like just going and staying in a shelter opposed to staying there. But how I survived all that was, I you know, I did whatever my sister, you know, asked me to do. I took her to the store, did this, cleaned up her kitchen, you know, for her son to mess up. You know, at night I would turn everything off, but during the night, her and her son, they had the television playing all night, lights on all night, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, then it got to a point when I would be, you know, fixing something in my microwave. She hollered down the steps, "Are you cooking down there?" I said, "No, just warming something up in the microwave." "Okay, because it smells up here." "Okay, whatever." So what I would do is sometimes I would go out and, you know, buy something from Popeyes, and, you know, they had those coupons on the back where if you call in and give, like, a little survey or whatever, you get two pieces of chicken for free if you buy a drink. So I did that, you know, for a while, and, you know, different places where you can get something free or whatever, you know, because I felt that she didn't want me to be cooking anything down there, which I really wasn't really cooking, because all I had was a toaster oven and a microwave. And then, you know, when I cooked in her kitchen one time, she was standing all over me telling me, "You don't need to have the fire up that high, blah, 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 blah." So I had to oblige you because it was her kitchen, so I had to do what she said. But don't breathe on me like that. I'm a grown woman just like you. And I felt that she wasn't being respectful to what I was doing, you know, but I'm respecting her and her house. That's how you have to do people. You have to be respectful to them regardless to how they treat you. So I went through that, and it was just, you know, this isn't all of the story, but I'm just, like I said, I'm trying to cut it as short as possible. And went through all that. So I had a niece who lives where I'm living at now in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And I had spoke to her one day up at my sister's, and I said, "Girl, how would you like to have a roommate?" "Oh, yeah, come on down. Yeah, yeah, because I really want to see somebody," because she had moved down here. Well, she had moved to Florida. Then she had moved here because her marriage didn't work out. So she moved here. So I came down, you know, look around. She took me around every day. We went out, and, you know, I really did fall in love with Fayetteville. You know, because it's nice, it's quiet, and, you know, it was just the whole setup that, you know, I really did fall in love with it. So I filled out an application for an apartment. The apartment came through, but what I had planned on doing was, when I got back home, was to take out a loan from the bank that I bank with, and they turned me down. So I said, OMG, but by the same token, where my niece lives, I spoke to her landlord, and I asked him, you know, did he have any vacancies? He said he was looking for one to come up shortly. And so I said, well, let my niece know so I can, you know, come down here and get it. And the rent to this apartment is much cheaper than the rent that I was going to get at the other apartment. But the other apartment was a little bit more of, well, it was much better than this apartment. Not to say that this isn't a nice apartment for the price that I'm paying, but the other apartment was much better because it was a duplex, had an up and down, so it had a great big giant closet, nice bathroom, kitchen, you know, it was really nice. So went back home. So my niece called me. She said he has a vacancy. I said, are you kidding? So she said no. So she said she would come up and, you know, bring me down with as much stuff as she could stuff in the car. So I put the things in storage that I had at my sister's and, you know, bought the things that I could stuff in her car because she had a little small car. I got my television and computer and clothes and some food and stuff like that. We really packed that car. So we got down here, and I stayed with my niece for about a couple of weeks, but lo and behold, the apple don't fall that far from the tree because it was my sister's daughter. So anyway, I moved into my apartment, And I went through some trials and tribulations, you know, moving in here. Like, for instance, I didn't have my furniture. My furniture was in D.C. for 8 months. I slept on a blow-up bed that eventually gave out, had to sleep on a lawn chair, and, you know, just running out of things, couldn't get to the store, didn't have, you know, money because I'm on a fixed income, you know, just going through things. But I always knew, by keeping my faith and my trust and my belief in God, that things were going to get better. And they have. But it's not to say that I'm not going through any trials and tribulations. I am. And I know that I'm going to continue, because this is for me to keep my faith and my trust in the one person that I need to keep my faith and trust in, and that's God. Because God put the people in my life, the ones that helped me to be productive, the ones who love me, the ones who sincerely care about me, the ones that would help me. All those other people are gone. They're gone. And I thank God that He is the one who opened my eyes, and He is the one who made me realize that those people that were in my life, they really shouldn't have been in my life. They was in my life for a reason, a season, a lesson, and a blessing, and it's done. They did everything they had to do in my life, so now they're no longer, you know, in my life. Not to say that if I saw them, I wouldn't speak to them or, you know, be cordial with them, but I just learned lessons along the way about the people who were in my life. You know, the ones who said, girl, just call me, I'll help you, I'll do this, I'll do that. Call them, they ain't answered the phone yet. You know, so I just, you know, understand, and it took me a minute, but, you know, I knew that eventually what was happening to me, because when I moved down here, a young lady had approached me one day when I was carrying all these bags from Walmart, but I got off the bus, so she asked me, did I need help? I told her, sure, you know, so she helped me to get to my apartment with the bags, you know, and all this and that. And then she asked me, did I belong to any churches down here? I said, no, I haven't really been down here that long. So she asked me, did I want a Bible? So I said, well, I have one, but it's in storage. So she gave me a Bible, and she took me to the church that now I am a member of. I've been baptized in this church, the Church of Christ. That's the first church that she took me to, and she took me to an evening service. And then she took me to this Pentecostal church, which I really, when I went in the door, I didn't have that welcome feeling that you should get when you enter a church. Now, mind you, this church was basically white, and I don't have a problem with white people's churches, but I did have a bad experience growing up when me and my brother, I don't know if my sister, I can't really remember, but we had went to this white Catholic church, and they put us out because we were black. And I never forgot that. So, and then the way they was looking at me, you know, as if to say, what is she doing here, and who is that? You know, instead of coming up, you know, introducing themselves or saying, you know, asking me who I was, I didn't feel that welcome that I felt at the Church of Christ. The second time I went back to the Church of Christ was when a friend of the young lady who had introduced me to the Church of Christ had told her that they was having a fifth Sunday, and the fifth Sunday at the church is when they serve food and they have a guest speaker, a guest pastor comes in and preach the sermon. You know, so she asked me, did I want to go? So I said, well, do you have to pay anything? Because I know some churches, when they fix food, you have to buy it, you know. So she said no. So I said okay. So I went, and it was so beautiful how everybody was embracing me, you know, and introducing themselves to me, and, you know, it was just like a family, you know. I felt like it was, you know, that I've known these people, you know. So it really was something that had went through my heart that day when I went back for that, you know, second time. So I just felt that was where I needed to be. So I I found out that there was a van that picks people up on Sunday that don't have transportation to get to church. So I started, you know, going to the church every Sunday and listening to the sermons. And I'm telling you, it was like, and to this day, you know, I got baptized March the 26th. I got baptized March the 26th of last year. And it's just been a whole eye-opening experience for me. You know, everybody in the church is just so, you know, kind and forthcoming, and you know, they just give you that feeling of being appreciated. You know, the way that, you know, you're supposed to feel when you come into the house of the Lord. You know, you're not supposed to have your nose up in the air and looking at people, like looking down on people and, you know, gossiping about people and, you know, putting people down in the church. And not to say that that doesn't go on in the church. I don't know. I haven't seen that in the church that I am in. Not yet anyway. But, and even if it should go on, it's not going to have an effect on me, because it will probably be maybe like one or two people. Now, I've seen some things happen when we went on a retreat, something that happened. But, you know, things happen. You have to move forward. You have to forgive. And don't forget. You have to remember, because if you don't remember things, the same thing can happen again. So I just took it as a lesson, you know, this will, you know, this is what happened, whatever, whatever. But, you know, just going to that church and how people have come and said that they were homeless. And one young lady that came to the church and said she had, she was homeless. She was living in her car. They took up a collection. And I understand that. I understand that she got a good amount of money, and she's never come back to the church. You know, that's, to me, is how people use churches that will help you out. And, you know, the church still helps people out, you know, because that's what God teaches us to do. You know, when someone's hungry, you should feed them. When they're naked, clothe them. You know, house them. You know, do the things that God would do. But you have people that take advantage, you know. But that's just something that I had to share with you guys, as far as, like, when I got down here and finally got my own place. And, you know, just when I would ride around and see, you know, people homeless and people sleeping on the street, it really got to me. It really, really got to me. And there shouldn't be no homelessness. There shouldn't be. And do you know there's a park directly across the street from the White House called, what is the name of that park? I think it's McPherson Square. Anyway, it's directly across the street from the White House. And do you know that people live in that park, homeless people live in that park directly across from the White House? And what does that say about the Let's Make It Great America Again? Let's make it great. Okay, let's make it great. Get these people off the street. Give them homes. Start feeding these people that are hungry. You know, start taking care of your own first. You know, all the money they sent over to Iraq and Iran and all them places to build it up for them to tear it back down or whatever. First of all, take care of home first. Because there's so many boarded up houses in D.C. till it's not funny. I've seen, you know, boarded up houses, places down here. But I noticed around the corner from me they had a house that, two apartments that were boarded up. But there's somebody living in them now, you know. But it's just a shame that people have to be homeless. It's really a shame. And like I said, me going through it as well, I know what it's like to be homeless. Even when you're staying with somebody, Because homelessness to me is when you don't have your own home. I don't care if you're staying on the street, if you're living in a shelter, or you're living with a relative, you're still homeless because you don't have your own home due to circumstances, some beyond your control. You know, just listening to that song, Welcome Home, you know, I could see, you know, what was going on there. Not to say that that's exactly what went on there, but just, you know, that was in my little scenario that I put that little thing together. And he's welcoming his woman back home, you know, after they went through an argument and fussing and fighting, and she goes off and may have went to stay with a relative, may have went to stay in a shelter, may have just stayed on the street, but she was getting a welcome back home. And some of these homeless people, they'll probably never get a welcome home. Some of these homeless people will die on the street. Some of them will get killed on the street. And that's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. You know how people, they had those cups and those signs up, please help me, I'm hungry. And you ride by them, you ride right by them, and you go and get yourself something out of McDonald's or whatever, and you eat it up. I hope you feel good about that when somebody else's stomach is growling because they have nothing to eat. You know. But every time when I can, I try to give them, you know, whatever it is I can. Like I said, I've even, at one point, when I was in D.C., I was sitting in I forgot where I was sitting at, but it was a big window where I was sitting, and this man was going in a trash can getting food. So I had had another sandwich that I hadn't even touched. So I went outside to give it to him. He said, no, thank you, ma'am. He had gotten used to eating out of the trash cans, and nobody should get used to that. That's not something you get used to. You know, nobody should be used to have to urinate in a cup while they're walking down the street. I've seen guys doing that, you know, pushing their carts and having a cup in front of them urinating. You know, nobody should have to sleep on a park bench risking their lives because they have these kids going around taking shots at the homeless people, urinating on them, beating them up, burning them up, you know. And that could be your mother. That could be your father, your brother. You don't know. You know, homeless people, they are human beings just like me, just like you. The only difference between me and a homeless person is that I do have a home and they don't. But it's not like I can't become homeless. It's not like I can't become homeless. And I'm quite sure, like all the people who lost their home during the Hurricane Matthews last year, some of those people were still recovering from last year, and then they get hit with Florence this year. So now they're living in shelters or on the streets or with relatives or wherever they can find shelter other than their own homes. And that's really stressful on a person. Very stressful, especially when you're used to having your own use, doing for yourself and not having to depend on somebody. Now all of a sudden you have somebody's mercy who can tell you to get out or treat you any kind of way. But see, just like God takes care of a little sparrow, he takes care of everybody in one way or another. So I just wish that one day, before I leave this earth, that everybody could have a roof over their head. I wish that everybody could have a meal three times a day. I wish, really, that everybody could be happy and everybody could spread love. That's what I really wish, because if everybody loved everybody, the world would be in such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. But because people hate on people, because they hate themselves, why the world is in such turmoil that it's in. You people out there hating on somebody because they're homeless, don't forget, the shoe could fit your feet. And remember when you're going to McDonald's or Burger King or all those other eat places and you're riding by somebody that's asking for change to get something to eat, enjoy your meal. You know, don't worry about somebody who hasn't ate in 3 or 4 days. You know, because you want to get yours. But it's just, it's really sad, you know, and I'm just so taken aback by the fact that people feel the way they do about homeless people. And I'm talking about really homeless people. I'm not talking about the people out there scamming and scheming, holding up signs, and then they get their money and they go to their homes in the suburb or whatever. Because I've known people to do that as well, to scam and scheme, and then they go home to these nice homes and so forth and so on. But the real people that are homeless and going through what they're going through, even these children, you know, that's even sad when a whole family has to live in a car. You know, little children are homeless, got to go to school and be ridiculed and made fun of and laughed at and become the joke of the day. Oh, you don't have no home. You live in a car. Remember, the shoe can fit your feet as well. Yes, it can. So we have a caller. I'm going to bring this caller in and see what their question or comment is. Good evening, caller. Your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, this is Mike from Singapore. How you doing?
Hi, Mike. How are you, darling?
Thank you. Is this Miss Delicious?
Yes, it is.
Yes, 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 yes. You know, when they even give you guys, you know, low-income housing in United States, you know, it's like they criminalize you because you are living in the low-income housing. Am I right or wrong?
Well, yes, that's sometimes true, yeah, because of the simple fact they look down on people who receive any type of assistance from the government. Even the government does, because they make up all these crazy rules. Because I remember coming, growing up in the projects, they would say that,
yes,
you know, if a woman, you couldn't have your the baby's father couldn't live with you, you couldn't be married, and, you know, things of the sort. So, yeah, they do you know, give you some type of restrictions and, yes, and you do some changes. Yes, I do agree with that.
Yeah, but I mean, but in Europe, in Canada, is restriction really is very low, or, you know, they will not mess with you. I mean, you qualify. But remember, there was a disabled, you know, Canadian applied for you know, a special housing in Toronto. And when his name came up, when they put application, everything looks good. But the only thing they told him, They said, you are not a Muslim. You are not belong to Islam religion, because it was Ahmadiyya. Ahmadiyya something, apartment building or something, is run by them. So they only specialize to give it to the Muslims. Amen. They should pay this guy millions of dollars because it's discrimination. But he has no problem. I mean, they didn't give, they said, oh, we cannot give you a letter came on him because you are not a Muslim. But then, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it should
is.
Be.
It's
I mean,
the housing
it may happen
can,
in other states too.
Housing market
yeah,
can
go
be
ahead.
Discriminatory because sometimes they'll say that, just like when we had moved out of the project, they said we had first preference to come back. But, when we,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people, they put up the thing saying that you would have to have your lease. And, you know, my mom had lived up there for quite a few years, and I'm quite sure that, you know, where was her lease? You know, a lot of them people probably got rid of the leases or something came up where they couldn't find the lease, and then, you know, the rent went up. You know, because these were like townhouses that they built up in that area. And they knew that those people couldn't afford to come back up in there. They knew that. So this is how they get people out. And then a lot of people who don't like to fight cases where they discriminate against them because they may have all blacks, all whites living in this area, and if a black person wants to live there, they don't want them living there. They'll say the place is already taken or whatever. You know, there is discrimination when it comes to giving out housing in different places.
Yes.
And some places you are treated a certain kind of way when you're living there, you know. But,
yeah, exactly. It's like you are.
They're paying their rent or their mortgage. There should not be any issues. You know, not unless they're tearing the place.
But, you know, another thing is, sometimes, you know, because some people live there in so-so housing longer, it's like they are police state. They're policing the new people. They policing everything move they do, and it's just completely crap. You know, this thing is not happening in Canada, Europe. Europe, people are trained. Mind your own business. In in Canada, same thing. I mean, that's the protocol. People, you know, you go to your home, have a nice time, whatever you want to do is free. You want to talk, you want to have a show, sure. It's your own boundary. Nobody can say you anything.
But the
question is... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, in the good old U.S. of A., where we're supposed to be making America great again, is one of the worst places... You know, because number one, it's nothing great about it. And then if Trump thinks building a wall and doing this and doing all the crazy thing that he's doing is going to make it great, he needs to wake up. He needs to wake up because there are things that are more important to do here than trying to build a wall to keep people out. You know, what you need to do is start building up this place and giving people homes and jobs and things like that. But, you know, it's just too many other things going on that he's not taking care of the main problem. And that is an issue here in the United States. Housing and homelessness is just ran rapid in the United States.
Yeah.
So he needs
to
get, you know, all these people off the street that are homeless. And, you know, work at it from that perspective.
Hurricane Florence came. Millions of people are right now misplaced. We don't hear any. We have total blackout news about Hurricane Florence right now. What happened to those people, North Carolina, South Carolina? Still, we don't know nothing. I mean, just a few days, it was a show to entertain us. And then after that, bye-bye, Florence. And before that was Texas. It was underwater.
Yeah.
Before that was Puerto Rico, etc. But really, we don't have statistics. How many people died? We don't know how many people right now without water right now in North Carolina. I mean, should other people from other states go to North Carolina and bring them water, supply, food, etc.? I mean, we have seen it in other countries. They do that because the government doesn't do damn crap. So the people from other areas go there, give them food and shelter, etc., something to help them. I mean, really, this, I'm so, is this the MAGA or MACA? You know,
and then they,
it's up
only
to the people.
The people, right, they only give the people a certain amount of time to stay in those shelters. So if you put somebody out of a shelter, where are they going to go? To the streets. So, you know, they're creating homelessness, you know, because they tell the people, we'll give you 30 days in here and then you got to go. But where is somebody going to go whose house was completely demolished, completely gone?
Exactly.
These people go back and there's nothing there. So what are they doing? Creating more homeless.
Yeah. But they don't tell us. That's the problem. That if you talk to, I was on another show a while back ago, 20 minutes ago, the people were saying it, MAGA. Everything is MAGA in U.S. Everything is good, everything beautiful, everything nice. They don't see me and you. We see it from different perspectives. I mean, they don't. Just they are like selfish. Those people are selfish.
Yeah.
They don't think the reality. Smell the coffee and see the reality. I mean, we have millions of people homeless in Texas, in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and it goes Pennsylvania, and et cetera, too. I mean, so, right now, we are going to have northwest of United States is in a state of emergency because of the major earthquake is going to happen sometimes very soon, whether in a few days, whether next month, but it's very close. And
right.
Also middle of USA, Wyoming, the super volcano, if it goes, we all in it. So then super volcano doesn't say, oh, you're poor, you're rich, you're middle class, etc. We are then should we unite after major catastrophe? I mean, we saw there was one show, one lady, she did it from North Carolina, a show, and she was crying. I talked to her, actually, it was very nice. But she was saying, I mean, there is no help for us. And finally, they find the communities, other communities come together, as I mentioned, they help them. Then she was really, she got better in that show. But the question is, again, how long the community can help each other? Because, you know, you have so much for yourself. I mean, you can give some of it out, but how much this can go? Why government doesn't give a damn about it? That's the problem.
And then some of these people down here are still recovering from Hurricane. Who was that other?
Andrew. And the other one.
They're still coming from Andrew.
Yes.
And you know, to have a double whammy like that is just that's really terrible. You know, because they was already trying to get themselves together, and then here come Florence. So you know, but people.
Yeah.
My thing is, if I lived in an area where the hurricane, I knew it was going to hit, you know, regardless of how many years later, whatever, I'm not going to try to rebuild back in that same area, you know, because the same thing is going to happen. But needless to say, maybe it's because they don't have anywhere else to go. I don't know. But the sad thing about it is to keep rebuilding and keep going through it over and over and over. You know, I would have to seek somewhere else to live, you know, try to do something else because, you know, that's kind of like a little bit not too cool. You know, but
right.
I can understand the person has nowhere else to go. You know, but it's a shame that, you know, these different
yes.
catastrophes can cause a person to be homeless, different reasons why a person is homeless. You know, it's a shame, but
mm-hmm.
nobody should be homeless. There are too many
boarded exactly.
up houses.
Amen.
In D.C., when I was living in D.C., they had,
yes,
oh my
yes.
goodness, in New York they have all those homes boarded up, Detroit boarded up, all these homes boarded up. Take those boards off them homes, fix those homes up, move people into them, monitor them, and help them out.
Yes.
You know, and they're saying,
yes.
you know, the government is just basically treating them like they're just throwaway people. They try to help
yes.
themselves by building tent cities. They come along telling them, you got to move away from here. People living in the woods, they go in the woods telling them, you can't live here. Okay, if I can't live here, give me a house, apartment, or something that I can live in.
Yeah.
Don't keep pushing a person from here to there, telling them they can't live here, you can't live there. You know, that's ridiculous. And that's why people become mentally anguished. And that's why a lot of these
yes,
people
yes.
go through these emotions that they go through, you know, becoming combative and just going crazy because of the simple fact they're tired of being pushed here and there. They're tired of being hungry. They're tired of sleeping on these benches. They're tired of eating out of trash cans. They're just tired. They are so tired.
Yes.
And I can
Absolutely.
Agree with them on all of them feeling the way that they feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't know that
another,
until they
yes.
unless they walk in their
happens
shoes.
To them.
Yeah.
And on that happened to them. On the before it happened to them, say, no, we don't care about you. We don't give a damn about you. And, oh, I'm fine. I'm paying this. But then it happens to them. Then they say, okay, Miss Delicious was correct.
Oh, different story when it happened
and
to them.
Mike, correct. Mike is truth. And, you know, and yet, you know, during right now New Orleans, just go to put New Orleans photos or something, and then put South Africa, Johannesburg.
Yeah.
United States of America pay to South Africa building a special house, low-income housing for citizens of South Africa. I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. I love it because those people needs to be. But at the same time, still New Orleans stays the same moldy apartments. And yet, all these apartments that they give people, all the refrigerators has a mold inside it. They have to clean it up. You know, all the air conditions, it needs to be cleaned. They don't do any crap to the house.
Mm.
They don't give it. And then if you ask them to do it, it's like, hey, you're asking too much. It's like you are
yeah.
guilt.
Well,
you have
they come and they
guilt
you.
By association. Yeah. 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 The guilt by association. You know, it's like that. Because you're asking them to fix something. That's their job in Europe, in Canada, in Australia, in very progressive nation, Asia, etc. I mean, everything they you tell them, they come fix it, boom, boom, without hassle. But here they give you craps.
Yeah, that's really sad, but. I don't know, Mike. Maybe one day, you know, like I had mentioned, if I live long enough, I may see it. And if not, you know, hopefully one day, you know, it will happen. But I don't think not, and not long as man has control over everything. But, you know, once God takes it in his own hands, it's going to be a whole different ball game.
Yes. You know, Dan Bailey? Just put the Dan Bailey on the search engine, Blog Talk. Dan Bailey, she has a lot of shows, beautiful shows. You might have, you will like it. But she died last year.
Oh,
Dianne Bailey. Dianne Bailey, she's very good, but she was died. She was homeless at the end of last year or in Chicago. She was died in her car, I believe, or because the last show she did, it was 311 last year. And Dianne Bailey died maybe a few hours after that because she was freezed to death maybe or something something happened. And she was coughing bad and etc. But she was a warrior because she was pro people. I mean, she knows exactly what the hell is going on in United States of America. That they don't give a damn on you. And then they bring Trump out of Genie. The box is open up and Trump comes out of it and then say, MAGA. Make America great again. How? A casino presidents of the casino owner can make America great in this country. First, he came and right away he put 15% tax reduction on 2 to 15 packs for all corporation, including him. He is still hires illegal aliens.
Like I said, you know, things will change only when God steps in. Because as long as man is in control, things are going to be the way he wants them to be, how he wants them to be. And we have no other choice but to, be sufferers of what man is doing to society. So, but, Mike, I do appreciate your calling in, darling. And we're at the end of the show. And how's the weather over there in Singapore?
Oh, my God. Beg your pardon?
How's the weather over there in Singapore?
Oh, weather. Weather is right now.
Hello? Okay,
yes. Weather is it's come up. Rain comes, rain goes. And, you know, that's how it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, like I said, thank you, and you're more than welcome to come back. We're on Monday.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate
Saturday.
You.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Yeah,
as
thank
well.
You very much.
All my other listeners.
No, you're a very good
you
show.
Line,
God bless you.
Yes, thank you. With that being said, if you're out driving, don't drink, and if you're drinking, don't drive. I like talking to you folks, not about you. Love seeing you, not viewing you. Love each and every one of you. Remember, tomorrow is Sunday. Go give God his praise and worship. And don't ever forget who wakes you up every morning. None other than God himself. So when you wake up, thank him first. Be the first person you speak to in the morning when you wake up. You guys have a blessed evening. Good night. This is Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. See you guys next Monday.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You just listened to the number one radio station on the internet, Delicious Talk Radio. Thank you and good night.